Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Chimerix, we had the pleasure of speaking with Stephen Bagley, MD, MSCE, an assistant professor of medicine in hematology oncology at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania, as well as section chief in neuro-oncology and an assistant professor of medicine in neurosurgery at Penn Medicine in Philadelphia. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Bagley discussed the evaluation of the small molecule ONC201 in the phase 3 ACTION trial in patients with H3K27M mutant diffuse midline gliomas and explained why clinicians should consider the trial for their patients. What would you say are some of the telltale signs of progression in glioma?
So in most of our patients with glioma, we are doing fairly frequent MRI monitoring, typically every 2 to 3 months for high-grade gliomas and less frequently than that for low-grade gliomas. I would say the most common situation is that we actually detect progression on an MRI scan before the patient actually develops symptoms. But for patients who develop symptoms before we detect it on MRI scan, which is typically going to be higher grade glioma patients, we will see symptoms that correspond to the initial location of the patient's tumor in most cases. So tumor in motor cortex, we might see, worsening strength on one side. Tumors that are involved in language, we may see some speech deficits that are arising or getting worse. And typically, when we're seeing a change on an MRI scan, we in the field of neuro-oncology struggle a lot with determining what is tumor progression and what are changes on MRI that are just sequelae of treatment. So radiation-related changes, for example, something that's often referred to as pseudoprogression. And it can be very difficult to tease out true progression versus pseudoprogression in patients with glioma, particularly those who have received recent radiotherapy. We can see symptoms in either scenario, but when we see a clinical decline associated with neurological deficits, I think that certainly worries us more that this may be a sign of tumor progression.
How and when do you typically broach the topic of clinical trials for patients with glioma?
In my practice, I typically bring up the concept of clinical trials very, very early in the course of our meetings, typically at the first encounter. And sometimes I'm bringing that up because there actually is a first-line clinical trial that a patient can participate on, where we either add or replace some component of standard of care therapy with an experimental approach. But even in situations where there isn't an appropriate trial for a patient in the first-line setting, it can still be very useful to plant that seed in the patient and family's mind that clinical trials are a huge part of what we do in neuro-oncology and that at some point in the future, particularly at the first recurrence of the tumor, it's very likely we'll be discussing clinical trials. Certainly, whenever a patient has a bona fide recurrence, that's also a time where clinical trials really rise to the forefront and we are actively trying to recruit patients and present clinical trials to them at the meetings where we're discussing management of progression.
What research, whether that's preclinical or clinical, have you found the most interesting in the field as of late?
So I'm a little bit biased in saying this because I work in this area primarily, but I am very excited about the potential for CAR T cell therapies for glioblastoma and other types of glioma. And I think that what we've seen just in the last couple of years has been some very promising data, particularly in children with a disease called DIPG or in diffuse midline gliomas. And, both groups from Stanford, University of Washington, and others, have shown pretty remarkable clinical and radiographic responses for CAR T cell therapy in some of these difficult to treat, primary brain tumors like glioma. And most of the success we've seen so far has been in the setting of intrathecal delivery, so actually administering the cells directly into the spinal fluid rather than peripheral blood delivery. And so this is an approach that we're working on at my institution and at many others around the country that I think is very promising. The one that has really sparked a lot of interest and enthusiasm at our institution is a clinical trial that is looking at a combination of two different targets that the CAR T cells are going after. So we're using a bivalent CAR T cell product that is simultaneously targeting EGFR, which is very commonly overexpressed and or mutated in glioblastomas, and also IL-13 receptor alpha 2, which is a tumor-associated antigen expressed in a high proportion of patients with glioblastoma. And we're delivering this bivalent CAR T-cell product intrathecally, again, through the spinal fluid. And we're hopeful that taking this approach of targeting two antigens at the same time rather than one is going to begin to address this major problem of tumor heterogeneity, which has really plagued us in the field of GBM research.
Can you discuss the ACTION trial and what it is evaluating?
So the ACTION trial is an ongoing phase 3 study, global studies, very, very large randomized phase 3 trial. And it's evaluating a drug called ONC-201, which is a dopamine receptor D2 antagonist. And this drug has shown significant promise in some single-arm earlier phase clinical trials in patients with recurrent diffuse midline glioma, which is this entity, rare glioma, typically more common in children, but can be seen at any age, that affects midline structures from the spinal cord to the brainstem up to the thalami. And this has been a historically very difficult tumor to treat. And ONC-201 did show some radiographic responses in a subset of patients in the recurrent disease setting. And so on that basis, the ACTION study was designed and is now actively recruiting patients around the world. And the trial is a randomized, double-blinded, placebo-controlled study. So there are actually three arms to the trial. There are two experimental arms looking at different doses of ONC-201, and then a third arm that's the placebo arm or the control arm. So we are actively recruiting to this trial at our site. And again, there are many others around the world, and we anxiously await the results of this important study.
Why would we say that clinicians should consider this trial for their patients, given the tumor heterogeneity that you mentioned earlier and the importance or potential significance of the dual targeting with CAR T cells?
The CAR T cell trials at this time are still in very early days and really are being tested primarily in patients with recurrent refractory tumors, who have already failed radiotherapy and other standard approaches. ONC-201 is being evaluated as part of first-line management right now to try to establish a new standard of care for this disease. So for a newly diagnosed patient with a diffuse midline glioma, once they complete standard of care radiotherapy, there really isn't anything else that's ever been proven to improve outcomes. And so for those patients, rather than waiting for a recurrence of the tumor and then seeking out clinical trials such as CAR T, the ACTION study represents an opportunity for patients to have access to an experimental therapy as part of first-line standard of care. So it provides access earlier in the disease course. And I also think that there is enough data at this point to suggest that ONC-201 is going to not necessarily be hindered specifically by the tumor heterogeneity problem.
Do you anticipate any barriers to enrollment to this trial?
There are two main barriers. One is just the rarity of the disease. This is not a common tumor. And even though there are well over 100 centers that are planned, to be opening this study around the world, it's still a very rare disease, and the trial is a large trial. They're looking to enroll up to 450 patients. So you can imagine with such a rare disease, even with all of those centers, this may take a long time to accrue. And the other concern is, it is a randomized placebo-controlled trial. And so oftentimes it's challenging to discuss use of a placebo in a patient population where the outcomes are generally not very good. And so sometimes that can hinder accrual for difficult-to-treat cancers like this one.
What are you looking to see from the trial, both in terms of safety and efficacy?
With safety, I'm not expecting to see a whole lot other than that we confirm that this is a safe and well-tolerated approach. The adverse event profile of this drug in the earlier phase studies was very benign, very well-tolerated, and we don't really expect to see anything different using it in this maintenance setting after radiotherapy. Efficacy is really the main question and is the primary endpoint for this study. So the study has a dual primary endpoints of overall survival and progression-free survival. I think certainly all of us are hopeful that this trial would demonstrate an improvement in progression-free and or overall survival. for the addition of ONC-201 following radiotherapy. But of course, that remains an open question, and we have to let the trial mature to find out.
If the trial does prove positive, what would be the significance of the results?
These would be incredibly significant results. This would really be the first systemic therapy to ever show benefit for this very difficult disease. And certainly if this was a positive study, there's reason to believe it would become a standard of care and practice changing for a newly diagnosed diffuse midline glioma. Can't speak enough about the importance of this study.
Kind of broadening the scope again to overall glioma, is there any other research that is ongoing that you would like to highlight in this space?
I think that just like we've seen some promise and interest for CAR T-cell therapies, there are other immunotherapeutic modalities that have been gaining increasing traction and are generating excitement in our field. I think that viral therapies, in particular, certain oncolytic viral therapies, have been showing promise in very small subsets of patients for many years now. But more recently, I think there have been some very elegant translational studies where folks have been able to analyze the tumor microenvironment on a much more detailed level, understanding the effects, both good and bad, of introducing oncolytic viral therapy in gliomas. And so I think that we are just on the doorstep of some breakthroughs in that field as well. Part of the challenge has just been the toxicity of those approaches in the brain. You can imagine injecting a virus directly into a large tumor that already is causing neurological symptoms. That tumor is expected to swell. You get edema. You get sometimes a transient enlargement, as I mentioned before, known as pseudoprogression. And if that's in an eloquent brain region, that can result in significant clinical decline for patients. So there is a bit of a tightrope to be walked there. And I think this is true of most immunotherapies in the brain. We're very excited about the potential for efficacy, but have to be really careful when you're in this part of the body, obviously. And so when you look at that alongside cellular therapies like CAR T and some of the other immunotherapeutic approaches being looked at right now, I think we're really entering a new era in glioma treatment. And I'm hopeful that some of this will translate into better outcomes for our patients sooner rather than later.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by Chimerix. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.